I'm Laura Vinroot Poole, and this is What We Wore.
Marianne McDonald is the creative director of Citizens of Humanity and our first denim designer on the podcast. She's worked with denim both as an entrepreneur, starting her own collection, and also iconic brands like The Gap. Tell me where you're from, Marianne.
I was born in Los Angeles, but then grew up in Eugene, Oregon.
How did you get to Eugene?
You know, my dad was a professor at UCLA, and then he was hired at Oregon. And so they moved there when I was a toddler and felt like they could create a really nice life for my sister and I. And so we grew up there in this little kind of hippie town, and where everybody dresses super casual and there's literally like no mention of fashion.
What kind of professor was your dad?
Labor law.
Oh, wow.
Things I know.
Exciting.
Totally. And my mom, you know, she was a fundraiser for the NPR station there. So,
oh, wow.
You know, it was a town full of like really progressive ideas, but set in this like kind of bucolic setting. And my childhood was just super simple. My dad loved sailing. My sister and I hated it at the time. Like looking back, I'm like, why did we hate that? We got to relax on a boat at a lake. That sounds incredible. But I think when you'd rather be playing with like Cabbage Patch Kids and Barbies, like it's not fun.
And tell me about style. What's your first understanding of fashion or style?
I think like growing up back then, like it was such a different time in terms of like in mall culture. Like I grew up going to the mall, like literally almost every weekend. I think
mom
was like one of the best dressed of her peers. And so she was always there to find a dress or something pretty. And my sister and I went along for the ride. And my dad was just sort of into like Scandinavian architecture and more simple things like Fair Isle sweaters and jeans. And it was that combination of like naturalness and femininity that I think kind of influenced my design aesthetic.
How did you first understand that fashion could be a career path?
The only kind of fashion that existed in Eugene was this literally, it's called like Saturday Market. And it was a bunch of music playing hippies selling tie-dye t-shirts.
That so, is so awesome. That's my dream.
Totally. Yeah, like that sounds fun. You know, with that as like a backdrop, my first job like out of high school was working for The Gap. And that was when Gap was kind of at its zenith. And I was really shocked at how well organized and edited it was. And how
it was it at your childhood mall?
Yes, it was.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I really was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They, you know, they teach you everything from like, this is so cheeseball, but like greeting people and like doing visuals. And I felt like it was so fun. And it kind of opened my eyes to the idea of doing something in fashion. But at that time, I wasn't quite sure like what path that would take.
I was talking to a young person who is living in New York and wants to get into fashion and is having a really hard time finding internships. And I said, I really think it's important just to do like to get a job at The Gap. I think, you know, not only the discipline of it, but also just working with young people and sort of just the energy of and the momentum of it. I just said, and I also said, for me, looking at resumes, if I saw that somebody worked at The Gap, I mean, mad respect. Like that shows me that you're willing to put your, you know, sleeves up and work.
I feel like one of the things that's really incredible about working retail too when you're younger, or it's just if you have an interest in fashion, is seeing the shift that takes place in people's mind as they go from browsing to feeling like they actually need something. And that unlocks is like everything in retail, because it's not something that can be boiled down to like an algorithm or something formulaic. It's really about like the magic all coming together.
From the salesperson side, also just starting to understand the like inventory and and how all of that, how you're receiving inventory, how it comes in, how, I mean, just the whole process of it. And it's stuff you never ever consider as a consumer, I don't think.
You don't, because you don't see any of that. But it is so foundational and so important.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful for that time looking back.
How interesting. Okay. And so from that, that's a high school job. And then
yes, that's a high school job. So then, you know, I went into doing everything from the visuals to at The Gap to then like I majored in English literature of all things. And so I was like, I don't know how those two relate. And I pray that I can get a job after college.
And did you go to school in Oregon, or did
In
you go?
Oregon, yes. And then I interned, in a buying office at like the one like designer store there. And because I was like, oh, I'm just going to become a buyer. You get to pick out clothes all day. But
Shopping.
really, that makes up the smallest fraction of what buying is, especially at like a store that had, I think at the time, like four different locations. So it was really like, managing inventory is what
It's
it
all
was,
that, yeah,
and profit
adding.
margins. And I think my biggest learning experience there was my job was to fax in orders because back then you had a fax.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like 2 weeks into my internship that I realized you actually had to fax them face up. And so all the orders that I was sending in were like page down, face down.
I love that. Oh my God, that is so funny.
No.
English major.
Totally.
So what, tell me what your professor dad and your NPR fundraising mom, what did they think about your path at the time?
I think they were concerned. I think my dad was like, I really, really hope that you can, transform this into a career. I think like as a parent, you always want the best for your child. And they knew that, I had an ability to get along well with others, and I was fiercely competitive. So they're like, well, we'll see what happens. And I think also like having that sort of non-pressure was really, really nice too.
Yeah. Did you know anybody? I mean, any of your family friends that worked in fashion or design?
I got my first job because my like sorority sister at the time, I was a Kappa, she got her first job like 'cause she graduated like 6 months earlier. And so she had sent me up for an interview at Guess Jeans in design licensing. And that was really at the time, the only place that hired young grads and had a slew of like entry-level positions. And so it was fantastic to be able to go from college to job working in fashion.
And that was in LA,
It
Marianne.
was in LA, yes.
And what was that like?
Great. I mean, my senior year in college, just to backtrack a little, my best friend and I were like, we need to move to LA. We're getting out of Eugene. I need to work in fashion. And so we rented a U-Haul and drove with our graduation money from our parents and our little selves and moved to LA and got an apartment above Erewhon. So we were seeing people like Billy Bob Thornton and Lauren Dern like shopping, and it was just your full-on like 20-year-old LA experience.
That's amazing. And back then it was actually just really like a health food store, hippie store.
Totally, yeah.
That's so funny. Tell me about what stands out about that first job in the licensing department of Guess.
I was like, oh my gosh, I rushed through college to like sit up at a desk for this. I was honestly like a little bit disappointed, but it did open my eyes to design. And so I remember working with the designers, and I was like jaw-dropping to me. I couldn't believe that they got paid to make cool, pretty things. And so it was really my first like head-on experience with people who were designing for a living.
And did you have a great mentor at the time, or did you
I
meet?
did, and I'm so grateful. I like actually don't even know how to contact her, so I pray that one day she'll watch one of these things or see
Yeah.
them, because I just have such like utmost gratitude to her. Her name was Laura Morgan, and she was a merchandiser, and her dream had always been to become a designer. And she knew that I really wanted that too after seeing these people working in design. And so she was like, Marianne, I would suggest you take classes to learn how to draw, and I'm going to do everything I can to get you a job as an assistant designer. And so she, like, once I signed up at Otis to for like sketching classes and fashion design, she moved me into first merchandising and then to design. And it was really like so generous of her and such an incredible experience being mentored by somebody who
Yeah.
was so thoughtful in their approach. And so from then on, I stayed in design.
Was it automatic? I mean, did it connect immediately? Did you know what you wanted to make and what was missing and kind of
Yes,
you
I
had a
think like
direction without even trying
totally.
almost?
I feel like all my life, I had always been designing the perfect outfit in my head. I just didn't realize that that was what it was. I would go to stores and be like, I wish I could find like, gray trousers like this or jeans that made me look like X, Y, or Z. And so now, like looking back, I'm like, oh, I was designing in my head before I even
Yeah.
knew what fashion design was.
In this role at Guess, was it always denim?
No, it's actually not denim at all. It
Oh,
was
wow.
wovens and knit tees, all of those things. And it was really about like learning how to draw on Illustrator. And I remember my first drawings working at, as an assistant were absolutely horrendous and terrible. And but people there were like really great in terms of mentorship. I think when you have those big corporate environments, sometimes like the infrastructure there alone is like the best education, just because it's so small that you're doing everything, you can really focus on like really building those foundational skills.
And did you start to understand what that structure meant, like what every department did, what a merchandiser did? I mean, why would you wouldn't have known that, I guess, before.
Totally. So like looking back, I had experience, on the retail floor and then in buying offices and in merchandising and design licensing. And what I didn't know at the time is that I was really putting together like a full like 360 view of what
Totally.
goes on in fashion. And while some people may not land their like dream job early on, like all of those different things will all come together to really help you in the future.
I totally agree with that. I want to go back one little bit before we move on. Do you remember having a favorite pair of jeans, and was it from the Gap growing up?
No, it was like my first experience with brand, and that was when actually Guess jeans like in the 80s were around, and it was I think it was like my fourth, like second grade, third, somewhere. I was very young, and I really wanted this like jean jacket. I was dying for a Guess jean jacket, no joke. And I remember like laying there in my bunk bed thinking about like I pray that I get this jean jacket, and so like such a passionate focus on getting something that was branded, and especially coming from a town like Eugene where brands didn't even really exist. So I feel like that was really, I think it was probably looking back, one of my parents' best purchases in their lives.
So from Guess, where did you move from there, and how long were you there?
So then I worked for Robert Rodriguez, and there, his background was he was the creative director for Dior, and then at the time was formulating his own line and working for Laundry by Shelley Siegel. And so it was everything from like draping to learning from somebody who was really meticulous in his approach to ready to wear. And I learned about suiting and chiffons and silks and all things like that. And so I was like a little design sponge. So I did that for a little while and then ended up working for Joe's Jeans back. And this is like right at the beginning of the denim sort of
Praise.
craze. And literally, it was a craze back then because it was like people just caught on to the idea of premium denim. And when I joined Joe's, I was hired as a ready-to-wear designer. And I remember like my first day on the job, he was like, oh, I forgot to tell you, you also have to do denim. And I was like, okay, fingers. And I remember going to those denim fabric meetings. And back then they would just show you like raw pieces of denim. And it was literally like all blue to me. And so I kind of willy-nilly out and hope for the best. But under like working under Joe, I actually got to really understand like how important having a like a distinctive point of view of how you want the body to look was when you make denim. And it's not just about like making clothes, it's about like bringing a silhouette to life on a human. It's a lot of like architecture and engineering that kind of goes into it.
Did you always try on the product? I mean, were you a
Definitely.
sampler? Yeah,
Totally.
because that's the, I mean, for girls especially,
Yes,
you know?
absolutely. And it's funny, like working in design actually makes you sort of less reverent about clothing because you're like, oh, what if I cut it here or do this there? And so it's always fun to experiment with it.
What did you learn in those two roles?
I learned that I loved the fast pacedness of it. I think there's that saying, like, when you think about like flow and when you're like in the throes of really like working in something that you're passionate about, like time stands still. And I remember like running around the sample room and, cajoling pattern makers to work on my stuff first. And it was just super exciting and fun and cool to be like absorbing it all.
Do you mean fast pace at that level to scale, things can be produced quickly? Or do you mean genes happen pretty quickly that you can, because turnaround is so different from somebody?
That's a great question. And I mean fast paced by in design, like I think every designer will like relate to this. You're always behind calendar on some level.
Right.
And so there's always a new collection that needs to go out. There's production approvals that have to happen. And so you're constantly juggling like multiple seasons and multiple products. And that kind of busyness was just so exciting to me.
Wow. I mean, that's really interesting that your brain likes that, because most people, I think, can't handle that.
Yeah, I think I like it was like something that really like got my blood pumping. I was like, oh
That's
my
so
God, I
interesting.
love this.
I love it too. I mean, I think from the buyer side, but I also think it's interesting you say that, because for me in market almost all the time, I'm like, okay, what am I looking at? When does this arrive? And trying really hard to understand, like, what are we doing here? Where are we?
Yes.
I'm sure it's two steps back for you because you're designing even like a year ahead.
It's exactly the same for you as it is for me. And I think for us creatives too, there's something that feels like you're okay with it. You're okay with not
Yeah.
knowing which season you're looking at, in that early sense, because you know that it's all going to come together.
And so, how did your opportunity at the Gap come about after these two experiences?
Right. So when I was at Joe's, I started when they were selling like literally like 500 pairs of jeans a year. And when I left there, we were doing like $36 million in revenue, which at the time was a lot.
Wow.
And Gap recruited me because they wanted to really like redefine like what 1969 denim was. And so I moved from LA to New York City and it was a perfect time in my life for change and new challenges. And I loved the idea of going to like a big corporate company.
What was your role? What did they hire you as?
Yes, I was a senior designer and then promoted eventually to design director for women's denim.
I'm really fascinated by the one, working there as a kid.
I know.
And two, like, to sort of rework 1969, the whole project. Like, were you at the time obsessed about jeans? I mean, I guess you'd been at Joe's, so you probably, to grow it from 500 pairs to 36 million, you probably were pretty obsessed. But were you personally obsessed? Did you only wear jeans? I mean, when you have that
Yeah,
interview, are you wearing jeans?
of course. But I think I wore Joe's to the interview, but I did wear some Gap, and I think Marc Jacobs was trending at the time. So I was like Marc Jacobs, but you better believe I had those outfits like fully planned out.
Yeah.
It was interesting too, because, at Gap, what you learned, or like at a big company like that, you learn the value of teamwork. And
Yeah.
so while some people might say, like, I did this, I did that, like, I think what I probably did there was work well with
A
the
team.
team. And that's everybody from like the sourcing partners to your factories to, at the time, the creative director was Patrick Robinson, who's
Oh,
amazing,
wow.
generous, and lovely. And
Yeah.
so I just felt this real connection to the merchandisers. And there was this woman named Lexi who headed up our denim merchandising. And she was just like so focused on elevating the assortment too. It was really like a superhero team, I think, of people who came together at that time.
Before you have the interview, do you go to the Gap store and sort of look at the offerings and see what's happening? And
Her.
yeah.
Yeah.
And what was your impression of where it was as compared to, the heyday of when you were working there?
I was like, well, the only way we can, make this happen is that we've got to have some change. So, I understand.
So it was really clear to you, like,
Absolutely.
what needed to happen? Oh,
I
really? How
mean,
interesting.
at the time, like the in my mind, like I was like, this stuff is not cool or not sexy. And if I'm totally blunt. And so I saw that as like my mission. Like my job is to, kind of refresh this and work with people to make that happen. And so it was everything from, switching fit models to upgrading denim. It was really like taking a sort of founder's approach to what the denim lineup could look like and what the American public was ready for.
And was it successful?
Yeah, it was really successful. Actually, I forgot. I started there in international design, and then was fairly quickly moved over to head up all of North America and international. And so I think, because of that time period too, they just really needed somebody that had experience with premium denim and kind of really understanding that denim as a vehicle, can achieve all of these, really important fashion moments.
And what's the difference in designing for international versus North America? And had you already done that at Joe's? Did you understand what that, and I guess probably at Guess.
The difference, Gap was a lot more eye-opening. I think, every 6 weeks we were in Europe or Japan. So really I got to see a global perspective of what people were gravitating towards. And, in broad strokes, you could say that, the Japanese have a real affinity towards or for Americana and things that feel layered and textured and authentic. There's also a softness and a femininity in what they gravitate towards. And whereas the European market has a slight more rock and roll edge meets a little bit of sophistication. So darker washes, leaner cuts, things like that.
And then the US is just its own beast.
Yeah, the US is a little bit more West Coast, I ha like centric, I think. I think that's why there's also so many denim factories here. There's an optimism, I think, that exists in American denim that makes it uniquely American.
In saying you did North America, I omitted Canada and Mexico. Are those specifically different too, or did you just sort of use your American model on that?
Yeah, American model for both of those. Canada was a little bit more like Europe, in terms of a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more refined.
So how did you evolve as a designer there?
Yeah, the thing that you learn at Gap too is just the sheer volume of product that you need to create to fill stores around the world. I mean, it's a lot. I remember our SKU count would be something insane, like 200 SKUs per season. And so you really, with that, you get to experiment a lot because that's a whole lot of denim and casual product. So it was really maximizing volume, kind of seeing what that fashion expression could be.
What was your biggest surprise or your most successful item that you created?
I think at that time it was like the boot cut.
Oh, wow.
I know that'll date you, right? Boot
No,
cut
but I
and
mean, that's so awesome. And I mean, it's such a, it really changed the direction of what people were wearing.
yeah, it was cool. I mean, they really supported it too with ad campaigns at the time and, a really big spend on that to make sure that the reach was really palpable.
When you think of something like that, do you have to like say, Patrick, like, are you on board with this? I think this could be really cool. It could be like, how involved in that part of it are you?
Right. It was working at the time we were working, I think, with Trey Laird, for
Oh, yeah.
Laird and Partners. And so it was, in Patrick's office working with Trey and Patrick and making sure that the casting of the models were really the top models of the time. And I think with that too, models bring such a level of both familiarity and aspiration to it. And so it was all these things combined, upgraded product, really compelling storytelling, all of that.
Is there ever a moment in that process, in that early part of the process, when you're perfecting, I guess, the artistic part, but also when you're producing, hundreds of millions of pairs of jeans, that you freak out and say, like, maybe this is not going to work, or maybe people aren't going to like this?
For sure. Yeah, you pray.
Yeah.
I think you're like, I hope it's good. We think it's good. I hope you think it's good. So there's definitely that sort of wait and see approach.
Yeah.
And but I think deep down, if a product's gonna work.
In my part of the business, I'm always like, people just want to be pretty and thin.
Totally.
Like, it's just like,
Yeah.
so if the boot cut will make you feel that way and look that
Right.
way, then it's
Yeah.
a success for sure.
Yeah, people exactly. People want to be a sexier, hotter version of themselves. And that's really what will make them say, I need this pair of jeans.
Jeans are so interesting because, I mean, the Gap, what are they, $100? I mean, like, or at that point, probably around
Yeah,
then.
I think they're 70 back then,
Yeah,
right?
so it's like so accessible, and
Accessible, yeah.
you
And
can
it's
really
funny.
change the world with a pair of jeans, I would
You
imagine.
totally could. And it's funny too, like with denim. It's much like it's super polarizing, much like swimwear. And it's unique in the sense of like people can use denim to find themselves or find how they want to look. Like, let's say you like put on a pair of bad jeans and you're like, not only do you feel bad, you're like, that's not me. And you put on a pair of jeans that makes you feel incredible, you're like, that's me. And you like understand, like it's when your like mind aligns with like the physicality of fashion. And I feel like there's something really unique about denim being able to do that.
When I'm in people's closets, that's the thing that's really striking to me is that denim can date you faster than anything in your wardrobe.
Totally,
And
definitely.
it's the cheapest way to, I mean, you can change it really pretty
It is.
easily.
And you can wear the same pair of jeans every week. Like you can't really like you buy a special top, you're maybe wearing it like four times a season. But those jeans, you can bring those out every single week. So there's such great value and style in a pair of jeans.
Are you a vintage collector?
I'm actually not. I think I'm the only denim designer on earth that is not a vintage collector. I'm almost embarrassed to say I appreciate vintage a ton. Like I think it adds like spirit and there's things that you can learn about denim, but I feel like my sort of non-affinity for vintage is what makes me probably a better denim designer, and that I feel like vintage doesn't check all the boxes in terms of being able to transform it to like what you want it to be. And so like sure you can now like alter things and like that perfect pair, but I prefer like I think non-vintage denim.
I love that.
So
So how long were you at the Gap before you started to think about launching your own collection, and what were the signs?
I was there for 5 years. During that time, I met my husband in New York City, who's also from Eugene, Oregon, and he was
No
in
way.
Israel
That's
for a
so
while. I
weird.
know, so wild, right?
Yes.
And yes, we ended up sitting across from one another at an Oregon alumni game, like that was televised. And at the time, those Chloe Paddington bags were trending, so I was carrying one of those. And
So
the
your shoulder was
cable
broken,
chair,
basically.
my shoulder was broken. And as I turned to like get up to leave, because I was going to somewhere else to see some friends, I knocked over a beer on the person sitting next to Kobe, and of course, didn't see it. And said goodbye to Kobe, and I meant to kiss him on the cheek, but accidentally kissed him on the mouth, and so I was like flustered and embarrassed. And quickly got out of there.
I love
And so
that.
yes, the person sitting next to him with the beer spilled on her, she was not too happy. Thankfully, Kobe tried to gloss things over and was like, "I'm sure she didn't mean it." And
Love that. You got together with him and y'all decided to move back west.
We stayed in New York for like years, had a baby there, and then we were like, I was traveling, like I was concepting. By this time, I had left Gap and was concepting McGuire, which was my company at the time, and was working on that while having babies. And so it was a bit stressful and chaotic having like crying babies and all of that. But I feel like the design portion too is also what kept me like inspired and grounded. It was something that's so intrinsic in my DNA to like think about clothing, which sounds so weird, but I just loved it. So,
What was the vision for the company? What did you see that was missing in the market that you wanted
right.
to
I
create?
love the idea of exploring like the idea of utility as it meets luxury. And so McGuire was really like, adding this feminine edge to this like authentic utility story. And so with that, I was flying like every week to LA, and my son, who was like 3, I think at the time, my oldest one, he was like, "Mommy, when can we live together again?"
Oh
I
my
was,
God.
my goodness, he doesn't think we live together. And
I heard things like that. It's awful.
so my husband's contract in finance was ending at the time, and I was like, "We're moving to LA." And so we moved to LA, and we've been here ever since.
How did you know who the right partners were to start McGuire?
Right. I actually didn't. I mean, there's so much you learn as an entrepreneur. I mean, looking back, some of the choices we made, I'm like, oh my gosh, I was just way too young and naive. And so I think, my husband's background in finance really helped like sort of square things away. He's highly organized and just an incredible communicator as well. And so having him as my partner, we just kind of naively, I guess, hoped for the best and set about raising money, putting in our own capital, and building a company from the ground up.
What was your biggest area of growth as a person starting this company with also with little people at home and all of that?
At the time, it was really about like learning the finance behind fashion. That was like the biggest unlock. And everything from, it's like as a business owner, like understanding cash flow too. Like from the time like you go from purchasing the fabric to when it actually hits stores to when you're actually getting
Gonna be
paid
paid.
by Kirk Goodman or Neiman Marcus, whoever. So that time was something we really didn't account for on the scale that it was. And so that was super, super challenging.
How long did the brand exist?
Yeah, for about like 6 years.
Wow.
And eventually we got to the point where we were like, we have to sell this. And so we were just losing too much money. And so from a personal and professional standpoint, we were like, okay, time to close up shop. And the learning curve was so steep. And hindsight is 2020, but we worked with like some really incredible, incredible people along the way. And the experience was really transformational from both like a professional and creative standpoint.
What are you most proud of from that experience?
I think just having the balls to go do it.
Yeah, totally. When you sold it, how many children did you have at that point?
And by then I had four. So Lily was a
Oh, my word.
baby. And I know, though I had two, which I don't think, like in retrospect, I wouldn't recommend like having multiple children while
Starting a
like
business.
starting a business. Yeah. There's just so many competing, like attention needing things that are like super, super demanding.
So did you take a break after selling it for a little bit?
I think like a couple weeks.
I was gonna say a month, right?
I know,
Okay.
I got really lucky that Amy, my CEO, reached out to me, and I had met her like, at I think it was Coterie in New York City. She had stopped by like the McGuire booth and introduced herself as a fan of the brand, and she was just super lovely. So when she reached out to have breakfast with her and Gary, one of the original founders of Citizens, I thought that that sounded like an amazing opportunity, so I was super excited.
And did you know about the brand? I mean, had you tried it
Of
on? And
course, yes. I feel like Citizens was always sort of my favorite, in terms of like their logo, like what they stood for in terms of authenticity and fit, was definitely like completely aligned with who I felt like I was as a designer.
And did you come in straight as creative director?
Yes, I
And
came
what did
in.
that look like?
So, anytime you go from being an entrepreneur to working again in like a corporate environment, there's always an adjustment. But I feel like Amy has this unique ability to like really inspire and bring out the best in her team. And so I felt like in a lot of ways, it reminded me of like working at a grown-up version of McGuire. And so it was sort of like exactly what I had envisioned in my mind, only like 10 steps ahead. And so it was in that way, it was a really nice segue.
And what does your day-to-day look like?
Usually I start my mornings with like looking at inspiration stuff, whether that's like books, because I like to like at least on my drive to work have that sort of creative juices like flowing. So I'll start my day with creative images, research or whatever, and then head to the office where I'm usually listening to some sort of book on tape or whatever on the way there. So I actually kind of do like the drive. And when I'm there, we start with fittings, and we fit usually like new season stuff and production stuff, and then move on to working with the team on everything from color approvals to new concepts, fabric meetings, all of that.
Wow. Do you enjoy that? I mean, do you enjoy this role more than you did? Well, I'm thinking your role at McGuire was every role.
Yes, it was every role. They're so different. I think that at this stage in my life. I mean, I have an appreciation for both. I
Yeah.
love the problem solving finance side of fashion.
Yeah.
I also love the creative part too. So, and like, I think working with the deadlines that we have and with how much product we're managing, there's so much of a people component of
Yeah.
what we do at Citizens that I think is really inspiring.
What's the hardest part of leading a creative team?
And maybe not hardest, but like what I like to focus on is, like just so things don't get stale, is okay, knowing what we, because each season there's like a new challenge, whether it's, a labor like not moving fast enough or fabric delays or some new fabric that you're super excited about is going to come in at the 11th hour. So there's always different things, but I love seeing how the team's evolving to become better troubleshooters and problem solvers and working together to really like help one another, whether it's like the person who handles product development for men's, like when she's a little bit slow helping out the women's team. And so I think that that's really cool and fun to be able to lead in that way.
How many people on the creative team?
On the creative team, there's three of us, but I don't want to discount like our team of product developers because
Yeah.
they are endlessly creative in how they participate in wash development and color development. So like I'd say three on the sort of more immediate side, but I think it's about a team of 10.
Do you have like group outings? Like, do you go see a movie
Yes.
together or things like that?
Yeah, a lot of times we won't see it together, but we'll say, oh, we should check out this movie or whatever it is, and then we do vintage shopping together.
Oh, that's
And
awesome.
LA has some really great vintage shops, especially like on La Brea,
Yeah.
everything from like high end to, those great t-shirts that come in beautiful colors.
That's
So we
fun.
do vintage as much as possible.
I didn't realize how young my team was until we had Saint Laurent came out with a collection that was all, this is several seasons ago, but it was all kind of Belle de Jour, the Catherine Deneuve movie. And I was saying, like, the girls were kind of like, I don't really get it. Like, I'm not really feeling this collection. I was like, oh no, it's all Belle de Jour. And they were like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so I
Totally.
required everybody to watch it. And I think they were really into it, but it didn't, it made me realize that, I mean, they're in their 20s. Like, they
Yeah.
had zero reference for
Totally. I
it.
so agree, especially, with the Y2K styling even coming
Yes.
on the scene. Like some of our design team was a toddler then, so they're like,
Exactly.
I don't know, it's due to me.
Have you
And
ever done any references of your gap time, your teenage gap time?
yeah, it's funny, like my teenage gap time, that's when like vests were trending,
Yes.
like vests and like wide leg pants, gingham shirts and like that whole peasant blousey thing. I feel like that's actually like more kind of where we're headed. Too.
So tell me, with four children, I had read that you find 20 minutes a day to meditate, which is shocking to me. How do you do
Well, I
that?
have to wake up before them, and I think they like it too. Because if like what usually like one of the little ones will be up with me too, and they'll like sit next to me, maybe
Aww.
on their iPad, maybe watching YouTube, admittedly. But they, I think, notice that it's peaceful.
Aww.
And my daughter told me that when she was in the car on a road trip, she's like, Mommy, she's like, I turn on the meditation app like sometimes when we're driving. And I was like, oh, I love that. So I feel like, they understand that that's sort of a nice moment of calm and peace that can kind of set you up well for the day.
I love that. And tell me, what about motherhood informs who you've become as a designer?
I feel like I have an insider peek at kind of what's coming down the pipeline. My youngest is my daughter who's loves fashion, but is still like in that younger stage. And my oldest son is 15. And so, and he has kind of like a, bigger build. And so you really see like kind of where like young menswear is going, like from a firsthand perspective.
Yeah.
And then with women, especially like young moms, you really see the importance of like looking and feeling your best and how many like events we have to go to, whether it's, you're meeting other classmates' parents or a friend out for cocktails. There's fundraising things. So there's just like endless events that you need to dress for.
Yeah.
And being based in California, a lot of them are more casual based, and so you need clothing that can kind of cross those boundaries.
What do you hope your legacy will be in the denim industry?
I think the thing I'm most excited about is us growing like regenerative cotton. When you think about like fashion's impact on the world and the environment, like being able to really be a pioneer in this realm is so meaningful to me, because it not only means regenerative agriculture, but just a commitment to like going after innovation in ways that can help the world and our communities. So that I think is really like the thing that I'm most excited about.
And so important to be with a brand that has the backing to be able to do that. I mean, it would be so hard to do with Meguiar, you know, on your own. And
absolutely, it would have been impossible. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Citizens too is like when we set out to do this, it wasn't with the intention of keeping it just for ourselves. It was really about working with our fabric supplier so they could bring it to other companies as well.
Yeah.
And so I think with our first year, we grew like 500,000 pounds of cotton, and now we're in like multiple millions of pounds of regenerative cotton. And seeing these farmers go from being skeptical about the idea of transforming their land to really embracing it as a way that means like more prosperity for both their family farms and for their workers is so cool.
Is there anything that I haven't asked that feels important to share?
For people who are even thinking about fashion, I love that it's an opportunity. Like if you're obsessed with learning things, it is like one of the most perfect careers possible.
Totally agree with that.
Like the amount of like the world you can see, the people you encounter, the daily problem solving, and the fact that you're in some regards, like your work should reflect like the culture around you, means it's always evolving. And I love that.
What did you wear to the prom?
Oh my
gosh. Eugene, Oregon, I have to know.
Okay, this is so embarrassing, and we're not going to be showing pictures of it, but
I'm going to need those.
I wore a cream dress. And unfortunately, I got my hair done. And so the cream dress was like a sheath dress with like a V back. And it was like Laundry by Shelley Siegel, which at the time was like a really great brand.
Yeah.
My hair was unfortunately in a beehive. And it wasn't meant to be in a beehive. It was just that the person doing my hair put it into a beehive. And back when everybody had like,
I think that's a universal problem for having.
So I think I like unintentionally looked a little bit more like the Bride of Frankenstein rather than
B-52s.
Yes. It was terrible. Terrible. I actually feel more sorry for my prom date because he was probably like, what?
I was like, what's happening? Do you remember other accessories? Did you have jewelry or shoes or bag?
You know, back then it was, I don't think I had any of those, or maybe I was wearing like platform shoes.
Right.
But like red lipstick and like pale faces were like the look du jour. It's so not cute and so unnatural looking.
Did you buy the Shelley Siegel dress at the mall?
I bought it at a little boutique, and I think the year before prom, I wore this little black dress, and again, terrible makeup, but lots of fun memories. I think my friends and I snuck vodka into prom in little Clinique like toner bottles.
Nice, that's a good move.
It was pretty clever.
Yeah, really clever, really clever. Good work there. Thank you, Marian, so much. I've loved talking to you and learning more about what you do.
Oh, thank you so much. You take care.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.